water runs downhill.
This fact of nature is a problem for environmentalists and farmers. Environmentalists say water running off farms contaminates the environment and may even turn our babies blue. Farmers say it's impossible to prevent water from running off the farms, and if we want to eat food, we need to get real about how clean we can keep things in the environment. This conflict leads us to ask, can we have a clean environment and grow food?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 766th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or, hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Drummondville, Quebec, who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Dave Michaels on the boards. Hello, Dave.
Glad to be here.
Folks, this from Metro Farm by Michael Olson. Yes, that Michael Olson. In 1840, the German chemist Justus von Liebig proved plants could be nourished rapidly by applying mineral salts in solution directly to plant roots. This breakthrough allowed for tremendous increases in crop production. By 1954, mineral salts accounted for more than 97% of fertilizers used in the United States. Synthetically derived fertilizers like anhydrous ammonia or nitrogen have been relatively inexpensive when compared to organic fertilizers because fossil fuels and money required to make them have been relatively inexpensive. But there is another cost to synthetic fertilizers, and that cost has been deferred. Nitrogen in certain forms is a toxic substance. Nitrates, for example, can impair circulation of oxygen in blood, causing, among other things, blue baby syndrome. The National Science Foundation estimates plants use only 30% of a farmer's application of nitrogen fertilizer. The remaining 70% escapes into soil, rivers, aquifers, and air. To date, nobody has paid to clean up the mess. This deferred cost, however, may come due. End of quote. That from way back in 1993. Well, folks, the costs are now coming due. In a landmark decision, California's Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board, boy, if that isn't a mouthful, has just voted 6-0 to begin enforcing water runoff rules for farmers. This leads us to ask, can we have a clean environment and grow crops? Here to help us find an answer, we have Mark Lasuertos, professor of science, California State University, Monterey Bay. Welcome aboard, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
I guess I better turn your mic on there. There, I got it. So, you're a professor of environmental sciences at one of the most environmentally sensitive areas on the face of the earth. The Monterey CSUMB is right at the head of the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary, right?
Yeah, and Salinas Valley, one of the most important productive agricultural areas in the world.
There you go. So therein lies the conflict, right?
Exactly right.
Farmers versus environmentalists. And that's the thing we're going to be dealing with today. So how did a science professor get mixed up in California's water wars?
It was a terrible accident.
Please not me. Please not me.
Well, I've been looking at non-point source pollution in agriculture for almost...
What do you mean by non-point?
So when it doesn't come out of a pipe, when pollution doesn't come out of a pipe, it comes off what we call diffuse sources, land, either parking lots or...
Like air pollution would be non-point pollution.
Air pollution, no, because it comes out of a tailpipe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So and there are mobile sources and immobile sources in air. But in water, non-point sources is basically sheet flow or flows that comes off of the water, off of the land, and then concentrates and becomes a polluted source when it enters or as it enters streams and rivers.
Mm-hmm. And that would lead you to the water wars between environmentalists and water.
And just to frame it, probably that dichotomy will have some limitations between environmentalists and farmers.
In what respect?
A lot of farmers are environmentalists. They really think that they are they're stewards of the land, and they work really hard to do that. A lot of them are divers. They care about the marine sanctuary. A lot of environmentalists are farmers and work on farms and know the constraints of farming.
Fair enough. Yeah, I would think it would be the city folks that we're really talking about when we're talking about environmentalists here.
Well, and I would say the dichotomy serves us best when we think of people that don't understand farming. When
okay.
they don't understand,
like I said, city
yeah.
folks.
Well,
okay.
yeah, but you can learn about farming in the city.
Mm-hmm. And that's our job today, is to teach them a little bit about farming. So just this week, holy smokes, the Central Coast Water Quality Control Board votes 6-0 after 4 years of wrangling over all of this to enforce water runoff rules on farmers. So first of all, let's educate the city folks about just exactly what this Water Quality Control Board is. It's a, as I understand it, a political board hired by the governor appointed by the governor to I guess rule over water in California. I mean, they really do own water.
They implement the Port of Colon, which is the state's Clean Water Act, and there are 9 regions in the state, and each region can set its own rules and laws based on that region's needs.
Mm-hmm.
And there are the appointees are the governor's appointees, and then they have a staff of a number of 30, 40, 50, 60 people in an office that work on the water quality issues. They make recommendations to the board votes, and then the staff implement and enforce that.
Okay, fair enough. This week they voted 6-0 to enforce water runoff rules. Now, that they voted 6-0 is a pretty clear indication to me that something's going on. I mean, that's a unanimous vote. After 3 years of struggling with a question, everybody votes one way. So, okay, do we have that big of a problem?
We have a very significant problem.
Ah.
The water quality in many of our rivers has very high issue, very high nitrogen problems and pesticide toxicity issues. Mm-hmm. So I think the message the board is sending is that they're taking this very seriously and that they really want to be as protective as possible of water.
Okay, and why?
Well,
for us city people here that don't know where water goes.
Yeah. So. There are two levels of the pollution problem. There's the surface water and the groundwater problem. The surface water problem is our streams and rivers have enough either pesticide residues or turbidity, which is basically soil particles, that have the potential and often do kill animals in the water column.
Mm-hmm.
So in the...
And it all flows where?
And it flows the marine sanctuary.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the groundwater.
Yeah, the groundwater issue actually is a new component of the ag discharge waiver. There, and I don't want to get into legal definition of the discharge waiver per se, but the first waiver passed in 2004 did not cover groundwater, in part because it's complicated and difficult to figure out what to do with. And this mm-hmm. waiver did include groundwater, which was about a third of the arguments was how to deal with the groundwater issue.
When you say waiver, what does that mean now?
Yeah, so every discharger has potential discharging into waters of California has to have either a waste discharge permit or a conditional waiver. And you're asking the limit of my legal knowledge on this. And in the case of agriculture and most non-point sources, it's difficult to come up with a discharge waiver where you actually measure the number, amount of constituents and then come up with an actual concentration of what you're allowed to discharge. So what they've tried to do is create a structure to waive their discharge but put conditions on that. And the conditions are what was the argument was about for
wow.
the last 3 years.
So
what conditions the farmers had to meet.
So everybody who has a land then and farms it has to have a waiver.
If they irrigate.
If there are any farmers out there that don't irrigate, tell me how you do that. I'd love to know. I guess some farmers in the Midwest rely on rain exclusively, but certainly not here in California. So every farmer in the area, which is, as I understand it, the second most productive agricultural district in the United States, we're talking about the Salinas and Pajaro Valleys here, every farmer here, and now this area covers everything from what San Mateo to San Luis Obispo counties, a huge chunk of the California coastal area,
mm-hmm.
$8 billion worth of agriculture, I understand. Every farmer then must have a waiver that grants them the privilege to have water running off their land.
Correct.
Holy smokes.
And they're divided into three tiers, and the tiers are a way for the staff to divide who they're going to regulate in what way. And the first tier is what they call sort of the minimum risk. The second tier is sort of middle risk, and the third tier is the highest risk to impair water quality.
And
the problem with the tiering system is it's rather arbitrary, and that's another one of the third of the arguments. I'm probably going to have seven thirds by the end here, but another huge part of the argument was what are the criteria for the tiering system.
And these waivers all come from a political body appointed by the governor of the ruling party. Folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're taking on a very interesting subject that has a direct impact right now on coastal California, but I think it's going to have an impact all the way around the United States, because it is agriculture, it is water, and it is you. We have with us today Mark Los Huertos, who is a professor of science at the University of Cal State Monterey Bay, and we will be right back. Please do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Today we're talking about agriculture in Central California, but I've got a lot of email feedback from people all around the country going, this is happening here as well. And so I think it's probably something that everybody should be concerned with. Now, why should we city people be concerned about it? Well, this is where we get our food. And so if agriculture is unable to survive these regulations, where will we get our food? That is the question. With us today, Mark Los Huertos, professor of science, California State University. Mark, we're talking about how we now have a situation here on the Central Coast, which is some of the most productive agricultural land in the world. It's the salad bowl of the world. We grow lettuce. We grow strawberries. We grow all kinds of things here. And we have farmers who, unlike the traditional farmer, if there is such a thing that exists anymore, where there's a farm family that lives on the farm and they have a plot of land and they tend that land, agriculture here is a little bit different. You have growers who rent numerous parcels of property all over the place. So they call them ranches, I guess. So you're a grower, you have all of these ranches, you're going to need a waiver for each one of these ranches that allows the rain to fall on your land and run off. Okay.
And it gets extremely complicated for these guys that are moving between parcel and parcel. Depending on their lease arrangements, they may alternate with a different kind of crop, and those crops may be categorized in different tiers in this tiering system.
So, for example, if you have strawberries under plastic, would be different than if you had lettuce or something.
And more importantly, the water quality coming off of those farms is different. And so the practices that you want to put on the farm for strawberries might be different than lettuce. And yet you're underneath this system of sort of regulatory compliance, where you're sort of told, I don't want to say told, you're given, I guess the water board would say, given options of implementing different various practices, but they may be in conflict with each other with different kinds of agricultural crops, which is
something that's example there.
There are issues with food safety for some crops,
right,
and not for others. The practices that are appropriate for to protect food safety mm-hmm. are often inappropriate for practices that don't have food safety issues. Or the practices that you want to do for example, organic farms will be different than conventional farms based on food safety, based on USDA organic certification, things like that. Those can potentially conflict on adjacent mm-hmm. farms or farms next to each other because of how people are managing these properties. So it gets... That's Holy probably just one
so
complication.
So you're going to need some kind of algorithm to plug into your computer to figure out all of these. How can you figure out all of these variables? I mean, farmers are just human.
I don't know, but this is my suspicion is there based on the criteria system of the tiering, is that if you're below 500 acres, you can drop down to a lower tier. So I think a lot of land lease arrangements will suddenly become less than 500 acres because it's so complicated to figure out how to do to both the tier three and tier two. Or growers will get bigger so that they can have a lot of land in one contiguous place, mm-hmm. deal with all their water quality together in one place. So I think the land use or changes are going to be the most dramatic changes in terms of this waiver. Potentially. Now, I'm just guessing, but mm-hmm. it's hard. The growers are still trying to figure out how this is going to impact them. And I think a lot of them are weighing different options of how they're going to respond. I will have to say, though, in general, I don't think water quality will be the prime concern in this. They'll be trying to respond to the regulation. They won't really have the capacity or incentive to deal with water quality, which is a shame.
Well, there are a number of issues here, as I see it. One is water quality, and that's certainly where we begin, right? We begin with water quality. We're concerned about the aquifers. We're concerned about the runoff into the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary and all those fuzzy little sea otters out there and whatnot. So that's one concern. But what about the political concern? You know, we're in a political year here, and things are hyper-political. So it's one side against the other to the death, as it were. And here we have a political board with political appointments with absolute total dictatorial power over water. Am I wrong?
No. they have, within our region, they set the law. They are in the enforcement agency, and they are the appeal agency. You can appeal to the state water board, and then you can appeal to the state Supreme Court. Again, you're pushing the limits of my legal understanding. But there are appeal processes, but they, again, are expensive and laborious. And growers generally are less excited about paying lawyers. Growers want to just get the work done. And so generally they're just looking at this trying to say, okay, how do I respond? Is there a way I can fix my business plan into this kind of new regulatory environment? And so they, although that the political thing is happening out there, they are less strategic about thinking about that. They basically just say, how do I farm tomorrow? And that's really what they're trying to focus
on. But that's that political part of it has to be because it's a political board. If you're a farmer, you got to be thinking, these guys now control my life, and they're of a certain political persuasion. So therefore, woo.
Yeah, it's. I think in general, growers will feel strongly that they would like to deal with the water quality issues. And so when they know the board is political, they know there's a political process. They're not happy about the political process, but they also, and this, it's probably a subset of growers. Granted, I can't speak for all growers, and there is no such thing as anyone speaking for all growers. But
I'll speak for them.
The growers, all the growers I've ever met want to improve water quality.
Of course.
And they're just trying to figure out how to do that and be able to stay in business. And generally, what they see is the board's approach is that the board and their staff don't understand agriculture well enough to be able to come up with regulatory compliance ways to do this. And so they feel completely frustrated because they've gone for three years of comments trying to educate the board on this approach, although it might work well for a source that comes out of a pipe, doesn't fit a farm practice very well. And I think that was the crux of the complicating controversy.
Why doesn't it fit? Well, like point source.
Yeah, so one of the requirements.
I mean, point source, you can just go straight to the farmer and say, okay, guy, you're making a mess here. You're out of business.
Yeah.
But non-point.
Non-point is the requirements of this tiering system, at least for the tier three guys, is on edge of farm monitoring. And that is monitoring water coming off of the farm, so discharges into basically off farm. That doesn't necessarily mean receiving water, but what's leaving your property. The capacity to figure out what that water quality is on leaving a farm is very difficult. The requirements are.
What do you have to have somebody standing there with a test tube, right?
Or 30 or 40 people, because runoff goes in lots of different directions. And so often it doesn't run down a single culvert into a stream. It runs off of lots of furrows in lots of different directions. And on the edge of the farm, you have to cover some sort of representative sample. This is very difficult, very time-consuming, and frankly,
it's impossible.
It doesn't really answer any questions. The questions that the staff have wanted is some sort of accountability from the farmer. And this is where the science and the regulatory process are divorced. In general, when I do monitoring, I think of monitoring as a scientific approach that we want to answer a question.
Being a scientist.
Yes. So the problem with the monitoring requirements in the staff, in the order, is that it's not linked to a scientific question that you can actually answer. It's collecting monitoring data, making it public for the sake of collecting data that actually has no meaning It's divorced of the processes of pollution.
All right, folks, this is the Food Chain. Michael Olson. Now, what do you think out there? Do you think farmers are going to, or growers, or whatever you call yourselves, are you going to be able to survive this? Or are you going to do like so many of you have already done, which is simply move away? 831-479-1080. Right back. Okay, imagine this, folks. It's raining on your property, and water is gushing down the driveway and out onto the streets. You have now broken the neighborhood runoff rule, which means you have to ask the neighborhood water runoff committee for an exemption to your waiver. But oh my, the committee is headed by that old grouch down the street, the one whose pristine lawn your dog dude on. And he no longer likes you at all. Without that waiver, the committee will fine you out of your home. What are you going to do? That kind of is the situation in which California agriculture finds itself in. Or am I wrong, Mark Los Huertos?
It's a death by slow regulatory accounting rules. So it's probably not a direct fine per se, but it's a lot of reporting requirements and trying to figure out how to basically create some sort of paper trail that you're doing the best you can to manage your farm property. So in the case of the runoff from a driveway, that you have non-coppered gutters or something like that, and you can document that you put in really nice plastic gutters that don't leach any copper or something like that.
What if the head of the committee is the old grouch down the street whose pristine lawn your dog dude on?
Well, one of the biggest problems of the order is that there's a lot of discretion that the staff have in enforcement.
There you go. And it's a political staff, and it's a political year.
Well, the board is political. The staff are state employees. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's better or worse, but that's who they are. And they're following the water code and trying to figure out how to enforce that. And generally, now, I can say universally, they're not trained in agronomy or agriculture per se in our region, so that they don't really have the capacity to gauge if a farmer is doing all that he can or can't.
So it is a political decision, one way or another, because they don't know what they're doing.
They have very specific skills. They are very skilled in specific areas, but in terms of non-point source farm operations, they don't have the skill set.
How is agriculture There's two camps here, and then both of them want to see the water cleaned up. Environmental community, backed by the political establishment, wants to do things one way, and farmers want to do it another way. So how does the environmental community intend to clean up the water?
It's not clear to me how they would. I can't speak for them. I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't seen solutions from the environmental advocates.
Just regulations and controls.
I think that they think that if you publish or make data public about water quality problems on the edge of a farm that your property has some sort of discharge problem, that is going to lead to some sort of embarrassment factor, or you're going to get sort of targeted, and that
tarred and feathered
basically. Okay. So it's sort of a big bullseye on a lot of the growers that are of certain sizes and certain risks. And I guess if I were a grower like that, I'm not sure I'd want to stay in business, to tell you the truth. I don't really like the idea of having a big target on me. Some of the growers are really actually the most innovative too. These are the largest growers with the most innovation in them, and the economy of scale is large enough that they can actually afford to do some stuff, but their margins are really thin. They tend to grow these things that are export crops, that are the margins are a couple pennies on a box kind of thing. So it's you're asking a lot of the most innovative growers, and then to punish them by putting them in the public light in terms of what's coming off their farm. I'm struggling to figure out the motivation or the incentive is for growers.
Okay, so we're talking about an industry that's brings in $8 billion of cold hard cash every year. Can it survive this? How can it possibly survive this?
A lot's going to change in the region. So I think a lot will change in terms of land use, in terms of land renting and things like that. But I think it's also going to be really hard for growers to figure out how to do yet another kind of management that they haven't really been asked to do before. So now we're asking growers to grow our food and to protect water quality at the same time in a way that the market doesn't really incorporate or allow. So it's for a lot of growers, I don't see that their success is going to be able to stay the same. So I think we'll see a lot of turnover. We'll see some big guys get bigger, and we'll see some guys go out of business, frankly.
So kind of the big will get bigger, the small will get smaller, and the everything in between will be like roadkill. They'll move to Mexico or China.
There will be some of that, and it's a threat that I don't think is very useful in a regulatory thing, because I think growers they don't want to go to China. They want to farm here, and they want to figure out how to do it in a good environmentally compatible way.
Well, we have a grower on the line, so let's pick him up and see. Folks, the phone number's today, 831-479-1980, 831-479-1980. Curious about what you city folk think. Do you think that where do you think we're going to get our food if growers can't grow? So let's go to Chili Bob. Chili, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning, Michael. How you doing?
Pretty good. Are we having fun yet? Now, hey, how are you going to survive this?
Well, I think we're going to get through it. And you know what? I'll tell you what. With the help of Mark, he's done just an awesome job of trying to educate the community and regulators. Unfortunately, like he said earlier, they have to look at it the only way they know how, and they don't understand a lot of things in the farming community. But with a little help, we're going to keep going, and we're going to get through this thing.
Why? How are you going to get through this thing? I mean, with all due respect, how on earth are you going to do that?
The public has to understand, and even their staff has made the statement, and the board chair has made the statement also, that it may take decades to clean up or to improve groundwater, and it's a fact. Michael, is over the years, you go back 100 years ago, when it used to be nothing but dairies in the Salinas Valley, And, you know, those dairies ran unchecked, and you know, the manure is loaded with nitrogen, and it just it leached into groundwater. And we have contributed that ourselves with commercial fertilizers. But there's a transition zone, and all the clay layers and whatever's moving down towards groundwater, no matter what we do for the next 10 to 15 years or 20 years, it may be longer in some areas, you're not going to see any improvement. And it's scary when you have regulators that are that are taking a look at your well water every year, and they're going to say that you're not doing any good. You're not fixing the problem. So it's going to take the educated court system probably to.
Well, yeah, but let me ask you this really quickly, Chili Bob. Downstream from you, you've got those fuzzy little otters in the Monterey Bay Marine Sanctuary. And yes, all us city people are looking at those fuzzy little otters thinking what sweet little precious critters they are. And here are those mean farmers upstream. How are you going to come to grips with that?
Well, we are coming to grips with it.
Hold on. You got to take a quick break. And I'm going to pick you up when we come back. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here. We're talking with Mark Los Huertos, a science professor at CSUMB and here in the Monterey Bay Area of California. We've got Chili Bob on the line and you as well. 831-479-1080. Join us. This is Rock and Roll News Talk Radio. Well, folks, the Central Coast Water Quality Control Board passed 6-0 the fact that farmers must now have waivers before they can allow water to run off their land. I hope they don't pass that for me, because I have no way of controlling what water runs off my land. The rain falls on it and it runs down the driveway and down the curb and out the gutter and down to the ocean and away it goes. So what would I do? I don't know what I would do if I had to keep track of and get a waiver for all of that, but that's the case. They voted 6-0 unanimously that farmers must now have a waiver. And so we're asking how farmers are going to contend with this, how farmers are going to go up against those sweet little furry sea otters that we see on television and out in the bay. And we city people are looking at those little sea otters and thinking how precious, and yet these mean farmers are doing what they can to get rid of them. Chili Bob, how are you going to contend with that?
Well, Michael, a lot of the problems with the you call them sea otters, and you know, and water that's running into the bay is basically surface water runoff and not groundwater. So those are two different issues, like Mark said. So I'm more concerned with groundwater in the South County, where the guys in the North County are more concerned with surface water. But we're just going to have to make a better effort to make sure that all our pesticides, chemicals, and fertilizers are staying on our property and not coming off. Now, I don't know that the recent waiver is going to deal much with stormwater runoff. I mean, I know they're trying to, but it's a really touchy issue. Most of it is irrigated water, tailwater runoff is what we need to control better.
Well, what about water? What about rain? It's raining today. Water's running off of everything, Mark. How do we contend with that? So you have a bureaucrat out there with a dipstick or something, you know, checking how much water runs off everybody's field?
They're supposed to, the tier three growers are supposed to monitor storm runoff once or twice a year, and they'll send somebody out there in a rubber suit and try to find some runoff and capture that and then send the results from the lab to the water board.
And then they'll detect contaminants in parts per trillion. Posted on the internet, and then you're going to be guilty of doing away with those fuzzy little sea otters.
There are only a few constituents that they have to measure in this runoff, but it will be public. Yes.
All right, Chili Bob, thank you so much for the call.
You bet.
I really appreciate it. Let's go to another grower here. We have Rory. Rory, thank you for tuning in. Are you there, Rory? Well, I think I clicked on it. Well, I guess nothing's working. So we'll just continue where we are. So we have all of these rules set up. How are they going to work? I mean, who is going to keep track of all of the water running off the fields?
Well, it's a subset of growers that are going to be monitoring their water, and then there'll be a number of reports that growers submit to the regional board staff, and the staff will be evaluating how well or not well the growers are doing, and then potentially they'll be following up and doing some enforcement activities, which is sort of inspections on the farm and seeing if the grower's doing all that they're supposed to be doing to control runoff.
Huh. And do you think this is going to work? I mean, you're a scientist.
Well,
Mark Huasuertos is a professor of science at California State University, Monterey Bay.
There are some areas that you can do best management practices that work really well. There's some areas that we don't have a good suite of practices that improve water quality well yet. There are some growers that are totally on it and are very good about controlling runoff. There's some growers that are just learning how to farm and they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Or they have a new piece of property and it reacts in a way to runoff that they hadn't anticipated. Or the well is in an awkward place and so they can't figure out how to get the well water to the crops in a place where they don't have some tailwater issues, and that's not their control, it's the landowner issue. So that every grower has a number of challenges to deal with each of their properties to figure out how to control runoff. And I think the growers I know are very thoughtful about how to do that. It's hard to figure out how to do that all the time, and it's even harder to do that in the context of the unknowns of how water's going to how water runs off at different times of the year.
What if you're an aspiring farmer, and you're going out there, I could see if you're a big farmer and you have lots of money to hire scientists and accountants, and you have the economies of scale sufficient to survive all of this monumental paperwork, and I can see somehow surviving that, but. How do you do it if you're a small farmer and you have
The small farmers have a lower tiering system, which their requirements are lower. So they don't have to do on-farm monitoring. They don't have to do a number of the reporting requirements. So that there are some the board was very responsive to the small farm in that level to try to make sure that the entry-level farming had the capacity to be able to meet these goals and not to feel overwhelmed by them.
Okay. Do you think this is all going to work?
In terms of lots of reports generated, yes.
Okay. So there will be a monumental new bureaucracy.
I would say that you're going to shift a lot of on-farm income to producing reports for the regional board.
Mm-hmm.
The board is going to have a bit more knowledge about the pollution issues in terms of edge-of-farm monitoring. We're going to have probably the same or... I'm hopeful. Growers are working really hard. So, maybe the water quality will improve.
Are scientists allowed to be optimists?
We're supposed to be skeptics.
Yeah. Okay.
I think, growers have a lot of motivation and interest to improve water quality.
Yeah.
And I think they're working very hard at that.
They have to survive.
Yeah. They don't have a lot of tools to be able to improve water quality in a short time frame, so I think it'll be a challenge.
A challenge. Folks, we will be right back to the food chain. Final thoughts. Can we have a clean environment and grow food? 831-479-1080. Right back. Hey, welcome back. Michael Olson here. We're going to try Rory. Rory, are you there?
I am, thank you.
Good, gotcha.
Yeah, just wanted to ask your guest, where are all the blue baby otters?
Where's the evidence that we're having trouble?
Well, there have been a number of sea otter deaths in the Monterey Bay, and that has been one of the concerns from the environmental organizations.
Do we know why they're dying?
Yeah, but come on, it's not from nitrate in the water. What's the parts per billion or parts per million nitrates in the bay, and is that moved measurably?
Yeah, it's not the sea otter deaths are not directly related to the nitrate per se. It's related to a harmful algal bloom, and the harmful algal bloom occurs in some of our lagoons and lakes in the region. And then that's been discharged into the food chain and probably eaten by sea otters that way. That's the guess right now, the hypothesis.
Yeah, I just think that we need to do a lot more work. I know that there was work done that measured the natural nitrates in the High Sierras in the Mequalamie River watershed back in the late 90s. That was done by a lady out of UC Davis. It was published in Nature. I mean, there's natural sources of nitrogen. It's not all coming from farming.
Rory, are your farmers going to be able to survive this?
Oh, it's going to be a paperwork nightmare. I suggest you get Dan Lagarde from the Strawberry Commission on the next time you talk about this. He's a wealth of info. I don't pretend to have kept up on all the details. It is, I know that when we have submitted, that is the ag community data, runoff water sampling data to the Water Quality Board, they were overwhelmed by the amount of data that was submitted. They couldn't even deal with it. So, I don't know. I went to a meeting in late December down San Luis Obispo, and there was some gal there from the Water Quality Board talking about the up-and-coming regulations, and she didn't even know that milligrams per liter equals parts per million. She's out in the audience. She goes, well, that's parts per million, isn't it? And she didn't really know. And I'm thinking, these are the people regulating our industry, and they don't even know.
That would be what Mark said. Mark said they have no knowledge of agriculture. So, Rory, are you going to survive this? How are you going to survive this?
We'll survive. I think you need to get somebody from the, like I said, Dan Lagarde, Strawberry Commission, get somebody in there that can speak on our behalf that's really educated. I don't pretend to be. I just hear bits and pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, for example, just water well testing around the valley here, you've got some deep aquifers here that are supplied by Sierra runoff, and they're pristine. They're really super low nitrate. And, it varies. Wells vary. They can be 100 yards apart. One can be clean.
One
can have a high nitrate.
Rory, out of time. Thank you for the call. Really appreciate it. Mark De La Huerta, are we going to survive this? What do you think?
We'll survive.
We're going to make it? We are.
It'll change, but we'll survive.
How are we going to change?
Growers are.
You can't shake your head on radio, Mark.
Growers are innovative. I think they'll figure out a way. And I'm working with some of the growers that are mm-hmm. they're already looking to figure out how they can do this and improve water quality.
Are they moving to Mexico?
None of the ones I know.
Uh-huh.
They like it here. They live on their ranch.
Will food from China become much cheaper? Because they don't have to contend with these rules?
Food from China is always going to be an issue. And I think once they figure out how to do some of our specialty crops, we could be in a lot of trouble.
Okay, folks. What do you think out there? Do you think that we can have a clean environment and grow food? Is it possible? You can log your comments on the forum at metrofarm.com. Love to hear what you have to think. And thank you all for joining us today here on the Food Chain Radio program. This has been Michael Olson with Mark Los Huertos, Professor of Science, California State University, Monterey Bay. Thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned next week for more What's Eating What Radio right here on the Food Chain.
Listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.